Welcome back to the Hemingway List, the podcast where we do things the Hemingway. We are talking about Book 11, Chapter 9, Part 2, Smurdy Hung Himself, Discuss. And also this line, "Are you asleep?" "I might well be," Ivan groaned angrily, "all my stupid ideas outgrown, thrashed out long ago and flung aside like a dead carcass. You present to me as something new." You know, I have this feeling that Dosto might have been aware that a lot of the intellectual ideas that he's put into this book, especially when he goes to the more scientific things, he'll mention some scientific stuff about like medical things or whatever. I think he might have been aware that it's a continually evolving thing and that ideas from 10 years ago might seem stupid now. And this whole novel, I think he had the feeling that eventually, not even that it would be stupid ideas, but they'd just be kind of common ideas. And I don't know, that line almost feels like his acknowledgement of that in a kind of way. Because that's the feeling that I've had throughout this book of like the concepts and things in it. I mean, some of the things in it go over my head. I'm not saying that I know everything that happens in this book already. But they're just conversations that are a bit played out for me, you know? And I struggle through it a little bit. I find it a little bit dry. And so, yeah, that line kind of struck out to me. So I thought I'd point that out as a question. "I Am Norwegian" has written a novel of a response here. Quite a long response. "I did start to reply to what you said on the podcast, but I will have some mercy given the length of this comment. I wanted to know more about this chapter, and in my search I stumbled upon this essay, which is 38 pages, but I've tried to summarize it here. If the chapter confused you, this should help. I will also try to explain both Smurdy's and Ivan's struggle so far and why Smurdy hung himself." My God, I Am Norwegian. You have gone beyond the call of duty here by doing this. And even though this seems like a very long comment, and it might take me, I don't know, 5 or 10 minutes to read this, you've summarized a 38-page essay in this. So I think it's definitely going to be worth reading. So I'm going to do that. I'm going to go right ahead and read it. And I just really want to say I appreciate so much that you would do that for our little community, that you would take the time to read a 38-page summary, or sorry, 38-page essay, and then to take the time to convey it to us. So thanks so much. "Who was Smurdy?" is the first subheading. Smurdy was both a character, but also Dosto's personification of atheism. He is not attractive, but he spends an inordinate amount of time making sure that he is clean and he wears fancy new clothing. Smurdy was uncommonly antisocial, and he was contemptuous and vain. That is probably how Dosto saw atheism and the intellectual change sweeping in from the West. The very first time Smurdy is mentioned, the provincial writer tells us that Smurdy's only reaction to the scriptures was joyless pleasure in finding contradictions. It's been a while, but I seem to remember that there were pages and pages of Smurdy playing with logic to upset Grigory. Smurdy was a genuine atheist, perhaps the only one in the book. Smurdy's atheism long preceded the appearance of Ivan on the scene. Atheism, Dostoevsky implies, was in the air, attracting not only genuine atheists like Smurdykov, but also the would-be atheists like Ivan. Nevertheless, Ivan appears to feel guilty for having created a monster in Smurdykov. Smurdykov states explicitly that Ivan's saying that all is permitted allowed him to commit a heinous crime. Ivan suffers feelings of guilt because he also believes, albeit unconsciously, what Smurdykov says, that he allowed or enabled Smurdykov to become a murderer. "Did Ivan believe in God?" is the second subheading. Did Ivan believe in God? In the chapter Rebellion, Ivan discourses on his anger towards a god that would create a world in which children suffer, but therein is the proof, among others, that Ivan is not actually an atheist. Why would a true atheist rail against something he believes does not exist? His last interactions with Smurdy shows the same thing. He becomes altruistic with the man who lies out in the snow. He becomes racked with guilt. For all his theoretical bravery, Ivan is still a moral man who has failed to kill God in his own mind. This is starkly contrasted with Smurdy. It's worth noting that while Ivan worries about children and their suffering theoretically, Alyosha is the only character that is consistently actually helping children throughout the novel. Early in the book, when Ivan met Zossima at the Hermitage, Zossima said that the issue was unsettled and that it would cause Ivan much suffering, how right he turned out to be. In addition to the guilt, Dosto seems to be using Smurdy to illustrate the attractiveness of atheism and nihilism, though Dosto had never heard of nihilism per se. The seeming attractiveness of atheism and nihilism were Dostoevsky the problem, for Dostoevsky, the problem of the age. What's up with the devil is the third subheading. The devil that Dostoevsky portrays is no arch-fiend, no evil genius. He is pathetic and unprepossessing devil. A faded gentleman with the nose cold, wearing out of date, threadbare clothes. This is an Augustinian devil, evil by dint of the emptying out of being, evil by the privation of good in a subject. Duressed by the conversation with the devil, Ivan appeals to logic to help himself out of his strait, as Ivan did also when he insisted in rebellion that his mind is limited to the Euclidean. Ivan, at the same time, both fears and hopes that the devil is real, because the appearance of the devil could imply the existence of God as well. Spiritualists, for example, I like them so much. Imagine they think they're serving the faith because devils show their horns to them from the other world. This, they say, is a material proof, so to speak, that the other world exists. The other world and material proofs, la-di-da. After all, who knows whether proof of the devil is also proof of God? Most of the dialogue between Ivan and the devil, aside from that concerning whether the devil is ontologically real, concerns prior philosophical stances held by Ivan, as parodied and ridiculed by the devil. The devil ridicules Ivan not only for having pangs of conscience, Ivan, who said that all is permitted and wrote the Grand Inquisitor, but even more for inconsistency of claiming at times not to believe in God and immortality and yet suffering guilt feelings. And this inconsistency is a problem precisely because Ivan claimed to be completely Euclidean. The conversation ends with Alyosha when Alyosha comes to Ivan's room to tell him that Smerdyakov has hanged himself. The appearance of the devil in Ivan's chamber coincides temporally, with the devil of Smerdyakov, and the devil has the same mocking, supercilious attitude towards Ivan and the dialectical subtlety that Smerdyakov had. Dostoevsky thus suggests that Smerdyakov has somehow been transmogrified into the devil, into the figure of the devil. Transmogrified, what a word. Transform in a surprising or magical manner.
Transmogrify.
Why did Smurdy kill himself is the final subheading. Nobody knows, but probably because Ivan rejected him. It is no exaggeration to say that one's very life itself may depend on the presence of a significant other. There is only one person who comes close to filling this role for Smurdyakov, and that is Ivan, with whom Smurdyakov forms up a common ground based on resentment and on the rejection of religion. Resentment. I've never heard that word. A psychological state arising from suppressed feelings of envy and hatred that cannot be acted upon, frequently resulting in some form of self-abasement.
Resentiment.
That's a great word. And I know that feeling, too. It's such a specific and nuanced feeling. I never knew there was a word for it. Wow, I gotta write that one down. Resentiment. And on the rejection of religion. Through much of the novel, Ivan seems unable to break away from Smerdyakov despite detesting him. Ivan, who, despite his rough edges, really is not such a bad fellow, may have had some sense of Smerdyakov's dependence upon him. And again, unconscious anticipatory guilt feelings may be part of what prevented Ivan from breaking with Smerdyakov. When the break finally does occur, Smerdyakov suffers a precipitate loss of self, and this may have led to his suicide. Either way, he died as he lived, hanging things. I like that you ended on a little joke there. Wow, thank you so much again for writing that up. And that really does actually clear up a lot and help me wrap my head around it all. And I also like that I learnt the word recipitan. What? Wait, what was it? I've completely forgotten. Resentiment.
Resentiment.
Resentiment. It looks like resentiment. Okay, anyway. Resentiment. Swim said the mama fishy also said, excellent summary, thank you. And Laura Y. Stitch said, his killing himself may also seem like a final revenge against Ivan. Now he won't be able to testify. He didn't seem all that concerned before. Maybe he was planning his suicide all along, which means it's only Ivan's word. JMum8779 said, this line really got me. I suffer, yet I still do not live. I am an X in an indeterminate equation. I am some sort of ghost of life who has lost all ends and beginnings, and I've finally even forgotten what to call myself. Very good line. That one struck out for me as well. Swim said, the mama fishy said, I enjoyed the drollness of Dostoevsky's imbued into Ivan's hallucination. This chapter reminded me of Mark Twain's Letters from the Earth, which I highly recommend. Letters from the Earth is a set of 11 letters written by Satan to the archangels Gabriel and Michael about his travels. Satan finds human beliefs about themselves almost insane, pointing out that their conception of heaven leaves out everything humans find most pleasurable in life, particularly sex. He also considers God's hypocrisies, not forgiving Adam and Eve, even though humans are supposed to forgive transgressors, forbidding jealousy, but then calling himself a jealous God, killing all the large animals during Noah's flood, even though they weren't guilty of anything, allowing cruelty and misery to torment the innocent. I also enjoyed the following line, especially a man may think up such artistic creations, such complex and realistic visions, events, or even a whole world of events into a plot of such astounding details that Leo Tolstoy himself could not even invent them. Nice shout out to a contemporary fellow author who, from what I've read, he much admired. Isn't that cool to think that he admired Leo Tolstoy? I think that's the coolest. Okay, where are we? Uncle Drosselmeyer said, Smerdyakov. Ivan was Smerdy's role model. He aspired to become Ivan and wanted to stop being a Balaam's ass. His self-image craved for that. He would switch his life for his. He bargained with the card of everything is permitted. In the end, he discovered that he would obtain not Ivan's, but Dmitri's luck. Not a good bargain after all. Not something his cherished self-image could endure. Random thoughts. This book, 11, titled Ivan, is pretty dark. We have Lisa getting deranged, like a preamble to what comes next, then the interviews with Smerdy, and we reach the bottom of hell and Ivan's hallucinations and Smerdyakov's suicide. After the scientific revolution, the devil came to be a mental aberration. Landowners were seen as social scour in Dostoevsky's time. Both devil and landowners became useless and despicable. Very interesting. All right. Now we're going to read on chapter 10. It's a fairly short one, about 4.5 pages, and it's actually the final chapter in book 11, so tomorrow we'll be starting book 12, which is kind of exciting. All right, chapter 10 is called It Was He Who Said That. Alyosha, coming in, told Ivan that a little over an hour ago, Maya Kondratyevna had run to his rooms and informed him Smerdyakov had taken his own life. I went in to clear away the samovar, and he was hanging on a nail in the wall. On Alyosha's inquiring whether she had informed the police, she answered that she had told no one, but I flew straight to you. I've run all the way. She seemed perfectly crazy, Alyosha reported, and was shaking like a leaf. When Alyosha ran with her to the cottage, he found Smerdyakov still hanging. On the table lay a note. I destroy my life of my own will and desire, so as to throw no blame on anyone. Alyosha left the note on the table and went straight to the police captain and told him all about it. And from him I have come straight to you, said Alyosha, in conclusion, looking intently into Ivan's face. He had not taken his eyes off him while he told his story, as though struck by something in his expression. Brother, he cried suddenly, you must be terribly ill. You look and don't seem to understand what I tell you. It's a good thing you came, said Ivan, as though brooding and not hearing Alyosha's exclamation. I knew he had hanged himself. From whom? I don't know, but I knew. Did I know? Yes, he told me. He told me so just now. Ivan stood in the middle of the room and still spoke in the same brooding tone, looking at the ground. Who is he? Asked Alyosha, involuntarily looking around. He's slipped away. Ivan raised his head and smiled softly. He was afraid of you, of a dove like you. You are a pure cherub. Dmitri calls you a cherub. Cherub, the thunderous rapture of the seraphim. Are you a seraphim? Perhaps a whole constellation. But perhaps that constellation is only a chemical molecule. There's a constellation of the lion and the sun. Don't you know it? Brother, sit down, said Alyosha in alarm. For goodness sake, sit down on the sofa. You are delirious. Put your head on the pillow. That's right. Would you like a wet towel on your head? Perhaps it will do you good. Give me the towel. It's here on the chair. I just threw it down there. It's not here. Don't worry yourself. I know where it is. Here, said Alyosha, finding a clean towel, folded up and unused, but Ivan's dressing table in the other corner. By Ivan's dressing table in the other corner of the room. Ivan looked strangely at the towel. Recollection seemed to come back to him for an instant. Stay, he got up from the sofa. An hour ago I took that new towel from there and wetted it. I wrapped it around my head and threw it down here. How is it? It's dry. There was no other. You put that towel on your head? Asked Alyosha. Yes, and walked up and down the room an hour ago. Why have the candles burnt down? What's the time? Nearly 12. No, 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 Ivan cried suddenly. It was not a dream. He was here. He was sitting here, on that sofa. When you knocked at the window, I threw a glass at him. This one. Wait a minute. I was asleep last time. But this dream was not a dream. It has happened before. I have dreams now, Alyosha, yet they are not dreams, but reality. I walk about, talk, and I see, though I am asleep. But he was sitting here on that sofa there. He is frightfully stupid, Alyosha, frightfully stupid. Ivan laughed suddenly and began pacing about the room. Who is stupid? Of whom are you talking, brother? Alyosha asked anxiously. The devil. He's taken to visiting me. He's been here twice, almost three times. He taunted me with being angry at his being a simple devil and not Satan, his scorched wings, in thunder and lightning. But he is not Satan. That's a lie. He is an impostor. He is simply a devil, a paltry, trivial devil. He goes to the baths. If you undressed him, you'd be sure to find he had a tail long and smooth, like a Danish dog's, a yard long, dun colour. Alyosha, are you cold? You've been in the snow. Would you like some tea? What? Is it cold? Shall I tell her to bring some? Cest in the past metre un chin dos. Alyosha ran to the washing stand, wetted the towel, persuaded Ivan to sit down again, and put the towel around his head. He sat down beside him. What were you telling me just now about Lisa? Ivan began. Again, he was becoming very talkative. I like Lisa. I said something nasty about her. It was a lie. I like her. I am afraid for Katya tomorrow. I am more afraid of her than of anything, on account of the future. She will cast me off tomorrow and trample me underfoot. She thinks that I am ruining Mitya from jealousy on her account. Yes, she thinks that, but it's not so. Tomorrow the cross, but not the gallows. No, I shan't hang myself. Do you know, I can never commit suicide. Alyosha, is it because I am base? I'm not a coward. Is it from love of life? How did I know that Smerdyakov had hanged himself? Yes, it was he who told me so. And you are quite convinced that there has been someone here? Asked Alyosha. Yes, on that sofa in the corner. Would you have driven him away? You did drive him away. He disappeared when you arrived. I love your face. Alyosha, did you know that I love your face? And he is myself, Alyosha. All that's base in me, all that's mean and contemptible. Yes, I am a romantic. He guessed it, though it's a libel. He is frightfully stupid, but it is to his advantage. He has cunning, animal cunning. He knew how to infuriate me. He kept taunting me with believing him. And that was how he made me listen to him. He fooled me like a boy. He told me a great deal that was true about myself, though I should never have owned it to myself. Do you know, Alyosha, Ivan added in an intensely earnest and confidential tone. I should be awfully glad to think that it was he and not I. He has worn you out, said Alyosha, looking compassionately at his brother. He's been teasing me, and you know he does it so cleverly. Conscience? What is conscience? I make it up for myself. Why am I tormented by him? From habit, from the universal habit of mankind for the 7,000 years. So let us give it up, and we shall be gods. It was he said that, and it was he said that. And not you, not you. Alyosha could not help crying, looking frankly at his brother. Never mind him anyway. Have done with him and forget him, and let him take him with you all that you curse now and never come back. Yes, but he is spiteful. He laughed at me. He was impudent. Alyosha, Ivan said with a shudder of offence, but he was unfair to me about lots of things. He told lies about me to my face. Oh, you are going to perform an act of heroic virtue to confess you murdered your father. that the valet murdered him at your instigation. Brother, Alyosha interposed, restrain yourself. It was not you murdered him. It's not true. That's what he says, and he knows it. You are going to perform an act of heroic virtue, and you don't believe in virtue. That's what tortures you and makes you angry. That's why you are so vindictive. He said that to me about me, and he knows what he says. It's you say that, he, not he, exclaimed Alyosha mournfully, and you say it because you are ill and delirious, tormenting yourself. No, he knows what he says. You are going from pride, he says. You'll stand up in and say it was I killed him, and why do you writhe with horror? You are lying. I despise your opinion, I despise your horror, he said that about me, and do you know you are longing for the praise? He is a criminal, a murderer, but what a generous soul. He wanted to save his brother and he confessed. That's a lie, Alyosha, Ivan cried suddenly with flashing eyes. I don't want the low rabble to praise me. I swear I don't, that's a lie. That's why I threw the glass at him and it broke against his ugly face. Brother, calm yourself, stop, Alyosha entreated him. Yes, he knows how to torment me. He's cruel, Ivan went on, unheeding. I had an inkling from the first what he came for, granting that you go through pride. Still, you had a hope that Smerdyakov might be convicted and sent to Siberia, and Mitya would be acquitted, while you would only be punished with moral condemnation. Do you hear? He laughed then. And some people will praise you, but now Smerdyakov's dead, and he was hanged himself, and you'll believe you alone. But yet, you are going... You are going, you'll go all the same. You've decided to go. What are you going for now? That's awful, Alyosha. I can't endure such questions. Who dare ask me such questions? Brother, interposed Alyosha. His heart sank with terror, but he still seemed to hope to bring Ivan to reason. How could he have told you of Smerdyakov's death before I came, when no one knew of it and there was no time for anyone to know of it? He told me, said Ivan firmly, refusing to admit a doubt. It was all he did talk about, if you come to that. And it would be all right if you believed in virtue, he said. No matter if they disobey you, you are going for the sake of principle. But you are a little pig like Fyodor Pavlovich, and what do you want with virtue? Why do you want to go meddling in your sacrifice if it is of no use to anyone? Because you don't know yourself why you go. You'd give a great deal to know yourself why you'd go. And can you have made up your mind? You've not made up your mind. You'll sit all night deliberating whether to go or not, but you will go. You know you'll go. You know that whichever way you decide, the decision will not depend on you. You'll go because you won't dare not to go. Why won't you dare? You must guess that for yourself. There's a riddle for you. He got up and went away. You came and he went. He called me a coward, Alyosha. Le mot de l'énigme. Is that I am a coward. It is not for such eagles to soar above the earth. It was he added that. He and Smerdyakov said the same. He must be killed. Katya despises me. I've seen that for a past month. Even Lisa will begin to despise me. And you are going in order to be praised. That's a brutal lie. And you despise me too, Alyosha. Now I am going to hate you again. And I hate the monster too. I hate the monster. I don't want to save the monster. Let him rot in Siberia. He began singing a hymn, Oh, tomorrow, I'll go, stand before them and spit in their faces. He jumped up in a frenzy, flung off the towel, and fell to pacing up and down the room again. Alyosha recalled what he had just said. I seem to be sleeping awake. I walk, I speak, I see, but I am asleep. It seemed to be just like that now. Alyosha did not leave him. The thought passed through his mind to run to the doctor, but he was afraid to leave his brother alone. There was no one to whom he could leave him. By degrees, Ivan lost consciousness completely at last. He still went on talking incessantly, but quite incoherently, and even articulated his words with difficulty. Suddenly he staggered violently, but Alyosha was in time to support him. Ivan let him lead him to his bed. Alyosha undressed him somehow and put him to bed. He sat watching him for over another 2 hours. The sick man slept soundly, without stirring, breathing softly and evenly. Alyosha took a pillow and lay down on the sofa without undressing. As he fell asleep, he prayed for Mitya and Ivan. He began to understand Ivan's illness, the anguish of a proud determination, an earnest conscience. God, in whom he disbelieved, and his truth, were gaining mastery over his heart, which still refused to submit. Yes, the thought floated through Alyosha's head as it lay on the pillow. Yes, if Smerdyakov is dead, no one will believe Ivan's evidence, but he will go and give it. Alyosha smiled softly. God will conquer, he thought. He will either rise up in the light of truth, or he'll perish in hate, revenging on himself and on everyone his having served the cause he does not believe in. Alyosha added bitterly, and again he prayed for Ivan. All right, there we go, another chapter down. Have your say about this chapter over at reddit.com/r/thehemingwaylist. Thanks for listening tonight. I'll see you tomorrow.